the joy of starting a new class in a new place is meeting new people. Sorry, Donna, this is my little cut off here. Rudy used to say as he grew, he would attract more and more remarkable people. And those of us who started out in the sort of less remarkable days would have to work really hard to keep up. And that was true. But I'm finding the same thing, that the people, and I'm speaking about you guys, sitting here, I don't know that you know how remarkable you are, but I can tell you, given the magnitude of the world population, the rarefied nature of who you are in this space is remarkable. And I'm very honored to have you arrive in this space. It's really wonderful. I've been given a lot of lessons in my move to Seattle. And as I described in the last couple of talks, the move was very, very difficult. Much more than I expected, and much more destabilizing. I wasn't completely prepared for it. On the other hand, 2 months in and it completely turned around. It became like the fastest transition I've ever gone through. Moving from one place that I really loved a lot and leaving it was very grief-producing, the New York house. And then coming here into a complete unknown, and as I described in earlier talks, never knowing where I was in time or space, I just couldn't figure it out. As I said in my talks, my GPS system broke down the minute I got here, my watch stopped working, everything was like totally undermining any sense of comfort and security. And then, this is an interesting story. When Blanche and I returned to Seattle from teaching in LA about a month and a half ago, not even that long, about a month ago, the first information I got was that my son Josh had lost his job here, which was the whole reason we were here, the whole reason we left New York and came to this place. And there was a real corporate crisis where he was working, a major shakeup, and what had been promised as a 10-year run was over in 2 years. And it was hard for him to hear that at first, but there was a convention of people who do the kind of work he does, video game work, happening within a week of the being let go, and he bought a plane ticket and went to this conference, a convention really, found out that he was highly desirable as an employee and has job possibilities all over the place, all over the world, literally. And my reaction when he first said this was, it started out with, oh my God, what have we done? You know, what have we done upending everything and coming here? And then almost instantaneously, it was a sense of, I give up. It was like the proverbial straw that broke the camel's back. The idea of having any control over my life evaporated, just completely evaporated. And I realized it has nothing to do with me. It has everything to do with a much larger oceanic flow of existence. And I'm floating. I'm floating on that. And there are very strong forces, wave actions and powerful, compelling forces that are very, very much driving my life. And I don't mean to make this about me, but this experience was like, rather than being contracting and constricting, it was liberating, just liberating. And I just felt, in the deepest sense, thy will be done. whatever happens. And we may end up staying here. We may end up in Europe. We may end up back in Los Angeles. We may end up any, there's a whole bunch of places that could happen. But all I can tell you is the word that radiated through space and time for me, which is absolutely at the core of all Buddhist teaching, is impermanence. It's the essence of the whole teaching. Nothing is permanent at all. And we're all told that. In some background place in our mind, we all know that's true. And yet, we fight against it with every molecule of our being. We all want permanence. We all want predictability. We all want patterning that tells us this is how it is and will be. And we can live the life according to these kinds of habitual patterns of security. I see it in my granddaughter. You know, I mean, Talia is very, very informed by and in love with pattern. She loves that this is what we do. And I'm watching how that's changing in her already, because slow motion patterns are now becoming very fast motion patterns. She wants to do this, and this in this order, in this particular order. And I see how it breaks up. It's going to change for her. It's going to keep changing. And she's going to keep growing and evolving until she becomes an adult like the rest of us. And then we want our patterns long term. We want to have job security. We want to have relationship security. We want to know it's going to be like this. And even though it's a completely false construct, completely false, and something deep in us knows it, we want it because we think somehow if we have a good job and we have a good paycheck and we have someone who loves us and we have, the movies on Saturday night or whatever it is your pattern creates for yourself, we feel if we have that, somehow we're safe. Life is predictable now, and we're going to be okay. And then the spiritual road in all of this is really interesting, because for me, I always had a very strong need for worldly attainment, for worldly security, and got it. And I really got it. I got everything I was looking for in the world. I had the recognition I needed. I had the financial success I needed. I had the creative satisfaction that I needed. I mean, on and on and on. Things were constantly being brought to the table. And they kind of kept happening, I think, because I kept getting out of the way. Meaning that I was opening myself up to thy will. Whatever the universe wanted, I was available. And my surrender to the universe wasn't getting out of the way. My surrender to the universe was meeting it head on, saying yes to whatever was brought to me. Yes, doing the work, the effort, making the effort that life required, and making it with what for me became a very full open chakra system, so that I was able to meet situations as they arose with a kind of real consciousness. In other words, I could see what was happening. I could go to meetings and be so present and so available that every time I went to a meeting, I walked out with a job. In my case, screenwriting. I always got what I was going after. Things would come to me. I would find a way to say yes rather than no. I would find a way to do the work. I found out how to function strongly and powerfully in the world. And it was wonderful. And then the spiritual awakening that I've talked about quite a bit took place about 4 years ago, and my entire interest in my career went falling away. My entire connection to my spiritual life evaporated. In other words, the thing that was driving my life disappeared, along with my personality, my name, everything I knew just went kaput, gone. And it was shocking. It was so shocking, because this is who I am. This is who I was. This is what I wanted and what I needed, and yet it just kind of dissipated. The career I didn't miss at all. At all. It was like, okay. I mean, it still was working. I still had to function. I still had to go to meetings. I still had to do what I had to do, because there was still stuff there, but it was with total disconnect. I brought my total attention, but I just, there was no hunger for it. The spiritual life was a really interesting loss because I didn't lose anything. I just lost the need to find something. The whole idea of spiritual life is this seeking for something. And this thing that we have mostly in our mind that says it's going to be, pure bliss, no suffering, the release of all of my drama, everything will work, everything will be perfect. It's none of that. But when the you disappears, it's just, and I've described this very often to you, it's just what is. That's all there is. There is what is. And what is perfect and amazing. Not necessarily to your ego mind, but it's perfect as it is, and the ego mind, which begins to disintegrate and completely evaporate, no longer is in opposition to it. You're just not fighting the world. You're not fighting existence. And so you're just there. And then there's this thing that occurs, which I kind of describe it as the scrubbing. All the residue of your life has to be kind of scrubbed out. They just have to clean it. They just have to clean it out. They being, I can't even describe what they is except all of what is. There's little pieces of you, flotsam and jetsam of your old personality and all that floating in the environment, and it starts to get washed away. And you don't even know what it is until you've moved everything, your entire house, all of your furniture, whatever's left in your life, you've moved it to some place to set up home, and then you're told 3 months afterward, forget it. It's all, we're taking it away again. It's not going to be what it was. And the part of you that normally would have gone, oh God, what are they doing to me? I mean, all this horror show of stuff that we usually bring to the equation just didn't show up. It did just the opposite. It just went, okay, okay. Because you can meet whatever comes. You can meet whatever comes. And almost every one of us has really heavy, awful, difficult circumstance thrown in our way. We have it all the time. And often our own reaction to it makes it even worse. It complicates our life. We take a bad situation and we make it traumatic and we make it convulsive. And it doesn't have to be that. But we do it. And it has to be that until we learn how not to let it be that. And the work that we're doing here is a kind of, please help me to surrender, meaning stop making me make things worse. Stop making me get in the middle of all of this and with my mind and my expectations and my dreams and my frustrations, stop having me be the arbiter of what's good and bad, because we're not. We don't know. We truly do not know. What appears to be terrible turns out to be amazingly good. What looks like it's the greatest thing ever turns out to be the destructive part of your life. The truth is, it's all interlaced. Yin-yang is forever in a dance. And I described this, I think, last week in my talk, that what used to be yin-yang for me as this very big balancing force is now instantaneous, good, bad, good, bad, good, bad, good, bad, good, bad, like a little molecular movement. It's just, that's kind of what life is. It's like the wave action of the Big Bang that they just are beginning to actually look at. You know, there's this incredible force of expansion and a force of constriction all happening at the same time. And they create this incredible drama, and that's what we are. We are the manifestation of that drama. So you can make that drama bigger and more powerful and more dramatic and ultimately make yourself a bigger hero or a bigger coward or whatever you think you want to make yourself in your own drama, or you can just go, thy will be done. And they will throw this stuff at you. The universe keeps throwing stuff at us, and you will find, yes, oh, 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 aso, aso. The great Zen story of a Zen master who has all these horrible things thrown at him, and I won't go into his whole story, but he just keeps going, aso. And I never fully got that. I mean, I did. It always seemed like a pose in a way. It's not a pose. It's really, you know, I've talked endlessly about my mother-in-law's last moment on the planet and last time I saw her, and she was hooked up to all these machines and she was, you know, they're barely alive, and I walk in the room and she looks at me and she goes, she smiles like this, and then she goes, that is enlightenment. That's it. That's what we're looking for. We're looking for, okay, Bring it on. Bring it on. And you can do it. And if you open all of these chakras, if you really become a player, if you become one with what is, if you become not oppositional, but creative and involved, you have this dynamic force working in you. You become one with the creation of the universe. You become one with this Big Bang thing that's been going on forever, and you become a component. You become a service, a servant. You become an expression of that thing rather than an opposing element, which, by the way, is still part of it. You can become oppositional if you want. You have every right to do that. And that's kind of why we were given, if you will, ego, mind, and free will. So we could become part of the dance. Part of the dance is flow. Part of the dance is no flow. And it creates light and dark, good and evil, happy, sad. It creates all of the coloration of the universe. And when you finally dissolve away, you are all of that. It's like, and that's my state of being. I wake up and I go, wow. That's really just, wow. It's a constant state of amazement. Absolute wonder and amazement and gratitude. And sometimes sadness. Sometimes there's anger that comes up. There's all this stuff comes up. But it's not you. It's just life force. It's just stuff in movement. It's always in movement. And your mind can grab it and try to turn it into your story, your ego, your mind, and make it you separate from everything that is. Or your mind comes up and just looks at it. Huh. And it doesn't translate it into me, mine. It just goes, I am that which is seeing. I am that which is sight. I am the hearing. I am the smelling. I am the knowing. I am. Just the I am. That's so powerful. I am, period. And we all are. We just are. And what we are is so much more than anybody imagines, because when you think you are this, for as long as I walk around saying I'm Bruce, then I am limited by Bruce's nature. I'm limited by his, I'm a male as opposed to a female. I am a screenwriter as opposed to a nuclear physicist. I mean, there's all of these things that I suddenly define myself as, but then you take that away or it falls away, and what are you? Everything. You're everything. Literally everything. You're everyone who sits in front of you, everyone you look at on the subway, everyone in the town around you, everything that on the TV, everything that starts to emerge is yourself. It's really who you are. You are that which is. And of course, you can only be that which is that you know about. And things you don't know about, well, I guess you can be that, but what is that? You don't know until it forms into some kind of cloud or concrete expression of reality. We are always in reality. Each one of us is absolutely real, both as a manifested form and as an unmanifested form, or unmanifested preform, just being. We're all of that at the same time. We are all of that. But the manifestation, which has occurred for a very, very important reason, which is the unmanifest, gets to observe itself and know itself through its concretization. It makes itself solid. And it gets to go, I am all of this. And it's kind of a state of extraordinary wonder and ultimately still mystery, because there is no ultimate answer to what this is. There's no ultimate answer. You can only go, it is. And so when you become aware of that, the reality of that day by day, minute by minute, is like knockout. It's like, wow, wow. Most people don't live in reality. Most people live in a projection of their own desires, needs, fears, confusions, and it clouds everything, the many veils that separate you from truth and reality. And then certain real moments happen, and it's fascinating to watch people deal with reality. One of the biggest ways to deal with reality is experiencing death. When death happens, it gets real. Not always completely real, because people have ways of even turning that into something obscure, but the sudden shock of reality, the awakening to reality, is a big moment for people. It's like, oh. And mostly, you don't like it. Most people do not like reality. They want it to be other. And so reality, rather than freeing, becomes a kind of cause of runaway. Move in another direction. Don't accept it. And so we deny reality and we create greater and greater levels of distraction to keep us from having to face it. You know, four martinis at night or whatever, you know, you're smoking or you know, watching, binge television for, 14 hours or whatever. It keeps everything at bay. It keeps it all at bay. And then finally it all fades back into the normalcy of daily life. Get up, go to work, brush your teeth, do all this stuff. And you forget reality. And then it comes surging back. But reality is. And at some point you will face it eye to eye. And either you will choose to live in reality or you will choose to stay narcotized in some particular way. And I will tell you, the choice of living in it is much better than being narcotized. It is like being introduced to a state of constant amazement and wonder. You know, we all want to know what's going on here. And scientists are digging into the undercore of reality. They're trying to figure out how the Big Bang happened, and that will help them understand this, you know. And writers are trying to get into the how and why of a person's choices in life and what their soul is saying to them. Everyone's trying to get there. I don't think anyone's going to get there. I think it's not meant to be gotten. It's only meant to be in awareness. The solution to this, I think the whole universe is trying to figure it out. I think God is in process of trying to go, what am I? What am I? It kind of knows it is, but what is it? It's this. And what is this? Good question. It's really a good question. The amazing duality of everything we see, you know? The amazing political spectrum, the stories, the drama of everyday life. It is overwhelmingly amazing. And you can get caught up in it, you know, and get really tied up in knots about it, or you can just undo the knots and go, but then there's also, for me, turning in, you know, now in my 70s, it's a different world, shockingly different world from when you're in your 40s. And every decade is really deeply different, really deeply different. So for me in my 70s to try to talk to you guys in your 40s and 50s and 60s even, you know, the messages I can give you will be called kind of the wisdom of age, you know. They're like, yeah, well, one day when I get there, I'll understand that, which is true. You very likely will, not guaranteed. A lot of people now in our culture get to the wisdom of age part and they're just playing golf and not getting it at all. But the truth is, when you're 40 and 50, you have a very different engagement than when you're 70. And one of the big engagements is everything I started this talk out with, which is building a life, being grounded, having security, having money, having success. I mean, all of this stuff just drives people as it drove me. And yes, you have to go through that. There's no way around it. You have to go through it. And you can go through it with a certain kind of wisdom for your age. Wisdom for your age means that you are not driving yourself through the urge and the need to manifest success as a abstract, mindless hunger, but as a conscious effort. And that what you're trying to do is find something that will guide you through the incredible waves and shoals of a very, very disturbed oceanic flow. There's movement going on in every direction, and there you are trying to build something on a wave action like this. It's very hard to build something. But if you can find in yourself The connection to the eternal stillness. If you, bless you, if you can find connection to that which is, rather than that which you wish was or could be or should have been or might have been, if you can find your connection to what is, you start to, I describe this a lot, put your rudder in the water and you find that there is an internal mechanism in all of us that guides the ship. It just guides the ship. It knows where it's going. We do not, but it knows. And if you just put your rudder in the water, which means sit still, open, ask for help to surrender, there is something really profoundly conscious within us, within each of us, that knows exactly what to do. And if we really surrender, it does it. And it brings you everything you need. Literally, everything you need. It may not be in the spectrum of what you want, although it may be. But it may more than likely be everything that brings you to some larger goal, which I would call awakening to truth, awakening to reality. And I really believe that's what we want more than anything. We think we want $10 million. I had a friend who made a movie that made him $10 million. And I spoke to his wife shortly after. I said, well, you've got it. You've made it. You're there. And she said, no. You don't have real money till you have $30 million. This was in the 90s. So now you know it's like $100 million probably. You don't have it until you make that. And it will never end. It will never end. In the materialization of life, the thing that gives you ultimate security will appear to be this or that. I have a friend who suddenly made $2 billion and had a lot of money, and then lost almost all of it except for about $750 million. And he was bereft. He was bereft. It was like he had lost everything. And I kept looking at him like, $750 million is still a lot of money. It didn't matter to him. He had lost, you know, $1,250,000. So finding your peace and your joy and your security in life, you know, in your 40s and 50s is all about getting all of that stuff. If you really open and surrender, you will get it, whatever it is you want or need. But when you hit 70, you'll realize the vanity and the absurdity of that pursuit. Why? Because it's all taken away. Every bit of it is taken away. Nothing you built for yourself will stand. Nothing. I don't care what it is. And I can tell you that, and you go, yeah, I know that. Of course I know that. Everybody knows that. No, you don't know that. Because you're working like mad to get that thing, and you don't want to hear what I'm saying for a good reason. And it's why people in their 40s and 50s and 60s don't hear that. But when you get to 70, 80, or whatever, and they start this process, they being the universe, of extracting and compressing and, you know, taking away all of the stuff that you've worked your life to get. And that doesn't mean necessarily your money or your homes, or I mean, it could, but it means that the being who owned all that will not survive, will not last. It will all be gone. And so when you're 70, you go, oh, okay. And if you're lucky, you will have in place a process, which is a spiritual process, of letting it go. Let it go. If you're not lucky, you will be fighting to the last breath in your body to hold on to the very thing you can't hold on to. And it will be ripped from your fingers. It will be ripped from your flesh. There is no way for it not to be taken away. There is no way. The intelligent lesson, the spiritual lesson, is surrender. Let go. And if you practice that letting go from an early age, you know, Paul and I have been doing this since we were kids. If you start young enough, it's a process. It's in place. And so you're letting go and letting go as best you can. And it's hard when you're in your 40s and 50s. You don't even know what you're letting go of, really, except your mind's attachment to stuff. But if you're letting go of this stuff, When the time comes to really say farewell, you can. Talked about my friend Barbara, who died last year and had been a student of Rudy's for many, many decades. And her final words to me, and I've said this to you, but I'll say it again. Her final words were, toodaloo. And I just went, yes, yes, that's how you do it, toodaloo. You know, it's not, oh, it's toodaloo. And that's an amazing achievement, to arrive at a point in your life where, in my case, you've just moved everything you have into a new house. You've just finally grown to love that after 2 months of horrible transition. You've just said, I'm here. I've got my trainer at the gym. I've got good doctors. I've got used to loving the sunlight when it comes. I've got people coming to class. I have friends who I love already here. And now they're taking it away after 3 months. I go, what? And I go, of course, of course. Whatever it is. Now, I don't know if it's going to get taken away. I may still be here if my son's career continues here. But if it goes elsewhere, we go elsewhere because I'm following the joy of my life. And right now, that's really my granddaughter more than anything else. And I know she's impermanent in my life. I know it, you know. She's changing every day at this point, you know. She's not even going to be with Grandpa after, you know, another few years. But I'm soaking up the juice of every day. Every day I get what the juice is, and we all need to find what that juice is. We all need to drink from our lives, we need to love our lives, and we need to be spiritually nourished enough to know that anything we have is not going to last. It is impermanent, and its impermanence is exactly what gives it its amazement, its beauty. You know, we were all standing on the porch the other night watching this huge double rainbow that came into the sky. Josh and Evan's house, and Talia was out there, and we're all just looking at it. You know, what do you get, about a minute or two with a rainbow? You know, it's like that. And it's like, would it be as beautiful if it was there all the time? No. I mean, you know, if we had sunlight here every day, it'd be like L.A., you wouldn't even know the sun was out. But here, the sun comes out, and you go, I love the sun. I've never loved the sun so much, because it's Seattle, and the Seattle, you know, when it comes out, it's like, take it. It's a gift. It's truly a gift. So it's impermanent. Night comes, daylight comes, night comes, daylight comes. In Seattle, rain comes. Everything comes. But what finally matters is that you open to the totality of what it is. This is it. This is the totality. You are living in the totality. You have no idea how absolute this very specific manifestation of this moment is. That's the hardest thing for me to convey to people. I'll say it, I've said it before, it doesn't make any sense to most people. This is it, there is nothing but this. There is nothing but this, and I mean this moment. Yes, there's supposedly a universe out there. Yes, there is a history of, you know, either biblical creation or evolutionary creation. There is billions of years feeding into this system, perhaps, and maybe billions of years going out of it. But the only truth is this moment. The only truth is this moment. Everything else is in your mind. It's conjecture. It comes on a little TV screen that tells you there's a world out there with all these horrible things going on, or a piece of paper, a newspaper that tells you, oh my God, drama, drama, drama. You know, but mostly, moment to moment to moment, all there is this. And the moment you can just say yes to this, the moment you can surrender, take a breath, ask for help to surrender, be what is, you discover the truth. The truth is this, period. And if you let go of the interpretive mind that's trying to put it into some perspective, and you just let it be, you will be walking in eternity every second. And you will be walking with an expression of complete and absolute wonder, and you will be completely and absolutely grateful. And that's what we're looking for. That's a spiritual life. It's to be present with what is and to be amazed by it. Any questions? Okay, as I've said to all of you, I am available. I'm available 24/7 for spiritual questions. And if you ever have any, you want any, you know, that's my role. Rudy did that. He was 100% available for answering the questions of the moment, and not at all interested really in your career drama or your personal life drama. I mean, he was. He cared a lot about it, but it's really all about one thing, and that is learning to become empty and nothing. Learning to be nothing is how he put it. Learn to be nothing. Paul.
When you talk about your spiritual awakening, it appears that that's something you can't really strive for. It's sort of the grace of the universe falls upon you or whatever.
Well, here's the truth. Everyone is already awake, but they don't know it. That's the only difference. And not knowing it and knowing it is a process of called realization. And it's like, oh. It's all that, oh. I mean, it can be bigger than that. You know, I mean, Eckhart Tolle had this 2 years actually on a park bench going, what is this? But it really is, it's just, oh. Because everyone, we're all in it, we're all it. We're all exactly what is, and we just don't know that. And we just don't know that because the mind is in this continual state of programmed confusion and illusion. But yes, it is an act of grace when it happens. But if it happens, it doesn't change anything. And if it doesn't happen, you're still in the same place. You just are suffering because you don't know it. That's all. The suffering is the problem. We suffer because of our ignorance. But once the awakening happens, suffering kind of goes away. It's not complete. I mean, if anything, I heard someone talk about this a while ago, and I was so moved by it because it really spoke to me, because I've been meeting a lot of awakened people. This one guy said, everything goes away but your sadness. There's profound sadness because you look at everybody in a state of suffering and you go, it doesn't have to be like that. Or it does have to be like that. It is what it is. But you want so much for it not to be like that. I would love to be able to go in and just pull the thread that locks people into their illusion, but I can't do that, you know, and I don't know what it is that does that, but there's a combination of reaching for it over a course of what feels like years. For almost everyone I know, it's been decades of striving with no success. I mean, most people, you can't make it happen. And then this thing just goes, okay. I describe it a little bit like when I was a kid, I wanted a tape recorder so badly, just a regular tape recorder. This is the 1950s. And I started telling my dad and my mother in August, that Christmas I want a tape recorder. I did not let up. Every night at dinner, from August all the way till December, I said, I want a tape recorder, 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 I want a tape recorder. And they went crazy. They didn't want to hear it anymore. And finally, Christmas morning, of course, there was a tape recorder. You know, and they were so relieved to finally give me that tape recorder because I wasn't being a crazy person anymore. And I loved that tape recorder. I loved it. My brother did too. It actually became his career. He became an engineer, a music recording engineer, had a studio, all because of literally my tape recorder. So it served a lot of function, actually. If it's the same thing with the universe. If you just go, I want this, I want this, I want this, I want this. The thing that wants it, in fact, is the very thing that's going to be destroyed. And destroyed is the wrong word because that's too negative. The thing that wants it is going to be told, there is no you that wants. The thing that wants is the problem. We're just going to go to that thing. And then you go, oh, I am that. I am the thing I want. I don't have to reach for the thing I want. I am it. I don't have to beg and pray for it every minute. I am already that. And all they do is blow up the illusion of being separate, gone. And then there you are. And you've always been there, always. The only thing that was separating you from it was an illusion in your mind that was created so you would become basically a constructive part of the universe. The universe will not get built, probably, by people who realize they're one with everything. I mean, they still have to function, but it's different. But mostly it's created by and driven by the drama of separateness. So it has purpose, and we're all part of that purpose, but it's a lot better to know you're part of the purpose than not to know it. I mean, better. I think it's better. But for a lot of people, they don't want that. You don't want to be told. To tell people what I'm telling you now, it's the last thing they want to hear. The last thing. They don't want to know that. They want to make $10 billion and not have anybody take any of it away. Okay? Again, thank you guys. Thanks for coming. I really appreciate it.